This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
We stink.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No one!
Well, here we go, another Brock and Salk podcast. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great.
You should be. You should be fresh. I looked at your rundown today. You should be fresh.
What, because we talked to a lot of people?
Yeah, you had like eight guests on. So.
Yeah, well, there's some people to talk to. You know what it is. No, my cup is full. Honestly, the Kraken starting last night, we're recording this Wednesday morning, it filled my cup.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it made me feel whole. I really...
Like in my cup. Kraken in my cup. I don't know about in my cup.
No,
like that cups.
Not that like, cup. No, just stop, please.
How do you have that song go?
What's in my cup stays in my cup.
My drink is there. It is. In my cup stays in my cup.
Did you play that this morning?
No, I should have.
See, these are all things you don't remember.
No, I do remember this one.
I remember when you guys came back from this. And we know that this is the next thing in culture.
Yes.
In culture, this is what everyone's going to be talking about.
Right.
We are there first.
Yes.
This is the song.
I would learn about it in Vegas.
I never once heard that song anywhere at
any time. Well, I think the year before that, Howdy, Dynamite was the big song when I was there, that Teo Cruz song, right?
Dynamite.
Right. And so I was like, oh, well, whatever we hear a few times in Vegas has to be the next big
thing. No, no. Got that wrong again.
There it is.
No, the problem was it would have hit, but then you associated it with Mike Karp.
That was a problem.
Yeah, that was the problem. You went like, Mike Karp stays in my Karp, in my Karp stays in my Karp.
Say what you want about Mike Karp. He hit one of the longest home runs I've ever seen at what was then Safeco Field. Do you remember when he put one off the Hit It Here Cafe?
Not really. No.
Absolute cannon shot. So, yeah, anyway.
So, I'm sorry, your cup is full.
My cup was full. Now you're ruining it. You're making me think about these old, terrible songs. Like, no, my cup was full. It was great last night, wasn't it?
So, do you have a glass of scotch with you? Do you have your green smoothie?
Well,
are you down in the basement? How are we taking this in?
Well, it was green smoothie, and I had kind of overdone it over the weekend. We went to Chelan for the weekend, and so I had kind of overdone it with some of that pizza, some Oaxacan food. And, you know, I'd consumed and imbibed. And so I've been all week just really sticking to salads for dinner.
Detoxing. Yep.
A little detox, bringing the weight back down to where it should be in the low 180s. So, I was just getting ready to eat my salad. Avery was complaining about how she thought the fake chicken nuggets were real and they looked real. And so she made up her mind beforehand that she wasn't going to like them, which is kind of created. So that happened just as the game was starting. And I was like, hey, you ruined this for me. Thanks a lot. Like, I've been looking forward to this for like a decade, but thank you for ruining the exact moment of the launch of the Kraken. And then she was upset, and then Heather's mad at me for getting mad at her. So, yeah, the beginning wasn't necessarily perfect.
Well, kind of was a precursor for the beginning
just
for them
like
as well.
The game.
Yes.
The thing is, they started off like a house of fire, and it's just a rule in hockey especially. I know it can be true in all sports, but if you have, like, if you get that adrenaline rush in hockey, and you go out there and carry the play like they did for the first couple of minutes. They drew a penalty, nearly scored. Like, they had the puck possession for the first, 3-4 minutes of the game. If you score, great. If you don't score, you might as well just assume you're down 1-0 because the other team will immediately come right back down and score on the other end. Mm. It is just an all-time truism of hockey. If you are buzzing and you've got the energy and you don't do anything with it, you will be down. I will guarantee it right now. And that's exactly what happened, especially to a talented team like Vegas. They go down the other way. It's just a real skill goal. There's I would say three types of goals you can score in hockey, Brock.
Write this down, honey.
You ready?
Mm-hmm.
You have a skill goal, which that one was. The first two goals they scored were skill goals for
especially
Vegas.
Especially the second, right?
Pacioretty goal was a skill goal. The Marchessault goal was a skill. I mean, those are just skillful players. One was on a rush. The other just came with a great move. So those are skill goals. I think
like
Morgan,
a Princeton backdoor cut.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
It all gets set up and the skill to finish it off.
Yes. I think the Geeky goal was a skill goal. The McCann goal was kind of a skill. Those are skill goals. Then you have grinding goals, right? They come off a rebound. You're digging in front of the net. And Donato did that for the first ever goal in Kraken history. Just battling in there, paying the price, dealing with the sacrifice, sticks hitting you in the back, people taking shots at you, and you just hang tough and you find a way to put a goal in because you're being just gritty and tough and wanting it more. That happens.
It's like a mosh pit.
A little bit. Yes, yep. That's a good explanation. I know that you're a big mosher.
I am.
So it makes sense.
Yep, big time.
The third type of goal are the fluke goals, essentially, where it's like, oh, whoops, that wasn't supposed to happen. Bounces in off a skate, nobody meant to do it. I think those are the three most common kinds of goals. There's probably some others I'm not thinking of. But
really, it's one and two, right? The vast majority.
Yeah, I'd say you get maybe 10% or fluky-ish goals where it's just like, oh, well, what are you going to do? It just, you know, bounced in off a skate or a screen or something like that. But, you know, I like the grinding goals. I like the Donato goal. That was great. I mean, those are fun to see. You don't always see them coming. Whereas, like, the especially the first goal the Vegas Knights scored, was like, oh, yeah, here it comes. Uh-oh.
That's just skill. Yeah. And they are one of the most skilled teams in the league, right?
That line especially. Yeah, I mean, they got some dudes. And yep. Did you hang with them? Yeah, you were right there with them. I thought Vegas looked like the better team in the game. Here's the good news. I don't think the Kraken played that well. And they still kind of got themselves back into it, nearly tied it up. So I think they're better than they showed in their first game, and we'll see how that kind of develops. I don't feel like they had their chemistry right.
This is what is so unique about this game. So it was a little bit unique about the Sounders when they came into soccer as well. So different than expansion teams that you're used to. Expansion Mariners of the 70s, expansion Seahawks of the 70s that just took, so long to catch and build their foundation and catch their footing and be a relevant team and a team that could win. And Vegas showed it, you know, as an expansion team with what they accomplished. Mm-hmm. You're not JV. This is not a JV versus varsity, and you're going to be the worst team. And it's going to take some time. It's going to take 2, 3, 4 drafts. You're going to have to build this thing up. Hockey, it appears, does not trend that way. And this team, at least last night in the first game of the season, certainly looked like over the course of the game they belonged.
Yeah,
that it wasn't a rebuild Mariner team from 2 years ago. They're like, oh my gosh,
they're going to compete, but they don't necessarily have the skill guys that you saw for Vegas, and it helps to have those guys. You know what I mean? They also are supposed to be built from the back end up, and I wasn't real wild about what I saw defensively. So.
Yeah, even to my eye, hasn't watched a lot of hockey outside of the AHL. That looks kind of ugly. Like, there was a lot of guys in space free for a lot of time.
You watch a lot of the A?
I have watched a lot of the A.
He's an Everett, Everett season ticket holder, aren't you?
Everett and those two? That's the WHL.
Oh, the WHL, not the
I was
AHL.
Just confused. Are you going to the East
WHL.
Coast and watching the A?
No, W.
Watching a lot of, like, Providence Bruins?
Yeah,
like, what are you doing in the A?
In Providence or Connecticut.
Okay, so it's not the A
WHL.
That you're watching. The WHL.
Yes.
Well, I get it. A and W are close to each other.
That's right. That's one of my favorite root beers.
Isn't it one of everybody's favorite? How many other root beers can you name?
Not many. No floats, I'll tell you that much.
Do they still make Ramblin' root beer?
They make some great cheese curds. I know that for sure.
All right. Look at Howdy try to drop some hockey knowledge, and you just swatted the puck right away.
Puck's right out of there. Player it out of the zone.
I played better defense than the Kraken did in their first game. Yeah, Adam Larson with a big turnover. He's like the big dude you spend some money on. So it was fun, though. Honestly, I mean, I forget what happened in the game. It's just one game. But just getting an opportunity to watch a winter sport that mattered here in Seattle, isn't that great?
Yeah.
Like, it's a random Tuesday night in October, and instead of like, hey, there's some baseball on, cool, and you start thinking about like what the next few months will be, you get 2 or 3 of those games a week.
Yep.
I think that's pretty great.
And I think it'll be even cooler, and I think it will hit that much more when it's actually in an arena that is familiar. It's rebuilt, it's redone, it's everything else, but from a locale and the history of that building and what it's meant and what it still could be, I think, right, you know, sooner rather than later, with the other Winter Professional League joining in, I think that's probably when most will get into their feelings. Last night was just it was almost just kind of captivating, and this is unique, and I got to experience this because it seems like everybody in Seattle is experiencing it, so I got to be a part of it.
Yeah, it wasn't emotional, I don't think,
for
people in Seattle last night, like it will be when there's a basketball team back in town, but it was cool and exciting, and that's a different kind of emotion. I just loved it. I mean, again, this is a sport I grew up with as much as any other, so I was in heaven, man. I just was so happy. As I said, it just filled my cup. Kyle, though, probably the biggest hockey fan of us at this point, after his trips to what is it, the Gila Arena?
Gila River Arena, of course. Yeah, they're the home of Shane Doan, the home of Ekman Larson.
Right.
Do you remember, and Kyle, you traveled
the home of the Ekman. Yeah, Ekman. First name Ekman, last name Larson.
You traveled with Howdy to watch a lot of the A-League games, right?
That's right. Oh, yeah.
How did you go to Providence, Rhode Island, to watch games?
Yeah, I was more of a Coast League guy. Oh, but, the Coast. You know, that's the next level down. Not a lot of people familiar.
Right. There you go. Okay. You like?
You know, that's
Q?
Where Chris Dreger came from.
Yeah, it's Dreger. Yes.
Dreger. Is it Chris?
Yeah, it's Chris Dreger.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Good.
You read his article. He wrote a pretty good piece, though.
It was awesome.
It was really, really well done.
Yeah.
If you get a chance to read what Dreger wrote in what is it, the Players Tribune?
Yes.
It was one of the better Players Tribune pieces we've read.
I read it and thought, wow, the ghostwriter on this was really sensational.
Probably, but yeah. I mean, the thoughts behind it were pretty good, too.
No, yeah, it was a really interesting story. Yeah. I mean, he's like AA baseball player. I'm riding buses thinking, man, the big leagues are a long way away.
It was a cool story, too, about, like, actually, like, what it really means to try. Like, he felt like he was working hard, but he wasn't really working hard. And, you know, I think you see that. What I took out of that article, probably more than that story, more than anything else, was how he mentions that, Brock, I don't know if you read it, Brock, but he was drafted by Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
And he was kind of riding around in their system, wasn't doing all that well. And then he got eventually let go. And he realized when he went to Florida that he wasn't anybody's guy. That because no one in the organization had drafted him, there was no one who like truly believed in him.
Hmm. And no one to defend him.
That's right.
Yeah. No, this is what I saw in him.
And so you might look at that as a negative of like, okay, now nobody really has my back. But he actually almost turned it into a positive of like, well, I now actually have to work hard because there's nobody who's going to give me my opportunity. And it honestly made me think about the Mariners and their farm system and all the guys that have been developed here that you feel like, oh, they went on somewhere else and did something great. And that's not unique. That happens to almost all teams.
There's a Chris Taylor. Like, DePoto's like, isn't it my guy? I need Chris Taylor.
That's right. So he didn't believe in him. I don't know if that's why Chris Taylor ended up sort of figuring out that he could change his entire approach to hitting, which he did.
Mm-hmm.
But it does sort of explain how situations like that can happen.
Yeah, a little clean slate. I don't get the benefit of the doubt. I'm not, and nobody's going to coddle me anymore and hold my hand. And I either make it or break it. It's go time.
It's like when Tom Moore didn't know you were left-handed.
Pretty much. I think still doesn't know I'm left-handed.
Did you feel any of that, though, upon going to Indy? I guess they had traded for you, right?
Yeah, they traded for me.
So you felt like
I was a part of their rookie class. I was a fifth-round pick.
So somebody, you felt like there was somebody there that specifically wanted you.
Pretty much. You know, I threw 3 touchdowns against them the previous year, Mike, if you remember that game. Went back and forth with Peyton.
Yes.
And so Bill Polian, he believed in me because of those 3 touchdowns. I think my only 3 NFL career touchdowns
were
in
that game.
All in one game.
Against Peyton.
Against Peyton,
Did you win that game?
No, they had 600 yards of offense that day.
The 600?
Yeah, Brock gave up a ton. Yep.
So just like an average day for Lamar Jackson.
Pretty much, pretty consistent with what we've seen in the Seahawks defense the last
couple guys want to talk a little Seahawks? I feel like we've delayed the inevitable here because what we all saw Thursday night was rough, Brock. I will admit I expected more from the Seahawks. I thought they would win that game. I really did. I thought they would kind of find a way to just... Honestly, the defense at times... They didn't give up that many points. They gave up a tremendous number of yards, and obviously in the second half it seemed like they couldn't stop them, but they did. They didn't give up that many points. They did come up with the interception they needed. They did get off the field on one of those defensive drives late to at least give you an opportunity to see if you could go down and try to tie the game before, unfortunately, Geno threw the pick. You know, their defense was probably the biggest thing you would point at, and yet... What'd they allow? 26 points in the game? Something like that?
Well, they just have not been able to put a complementary game together. Mm-hmm. You know, when the offense has been great, the defense gives up a ton of yards. When the defense in that first half gave you every opportunity, then you have a holding call and then you miss another field goal. And instead of 14-3 going into halftime, and you're probably right, they win that game if they're up 14-3.
They sure had the opportunity. I mean, I think about where they were at. It was about 3.5 minutes left in the first half.
Yep.
They were up 7-0, and the Rams had the ball 4th-and-1 at like the 40 or so. You stop them on that 4th-and-1, you have the ball, you go down and score a touchdown, and you get the ball at the begin the second half, you could be up 21-0.
Yep.
And honestly, I was sitting there and talking with Jim Cangiano, who was next to me. We're like, hey, you get 2-for-1 here, you kind of put this thing to bed. And instead, you give up the first down, you give up the field goal, you fail to score again,
yep.
And the next thing you know, you're in a deep hole. Is that the defense's fault? Defense at least held them to the field goal. No, they didn't get the stop on fourth down, but they held them to a field goal. You have a chance to go up 21-3 if you execute offensively.
Yep.
They didn't. And nope. That's before Russell got hurt.
Nope.
So don't. I know that it's easy to point at the defense, and yes, they totally broke down in the second half. It's easy to point at Russ being hurt, right? He couldn't lead them back at the end. But I kind of point to what happened around the middle of the game, right around halftime, and say, what's going on with the offense?
Yep. Totally agree with that. But at the end of the day, you look at it and you are what, you know, your record says you are. And all of these conversations that we have had for 5 weeks, all these twists and turns, and is it his fault? Is it their fault? Is it the offense? Is it the defense? Is it the first half? Is it the second half? Is it the coaching? Is it Ken Norton? Is it Shane Waldron? Is it right? And at the end of the day, you're 2-3 team. And that to me, to my eye, is I've watched the NFL kind of big picture, maybe more or as much as I ever have, Mike. The Seahawks to me look like a 2-3 team. That's just from a talent perspective, perspective. They don't look like a 4-1 team, right? They don't look certainly like a 5-0 team. They've not played a complete game really in any of their five. They have a few glaring weaknesses that are getting exposed. They have obviously some tremendous strength still in DK and Tyler and Russell. But you know what? He's out now, and you were a 2-3 team basically with him. And I fear what you could be for the next 5 weeks without him.
Yeah, those are all really good points. I think what you are is top heavy. They seem like a top heavy team to me. You got some really talented guys at the top, especially offensively with Russ and your two wide receivers. You've spent some money on some guys on defense. I don't know if they're necessarily forcing you to be top heavy, but certainly payment wise, they are. You feel like they're just they don't feel complete.
Nope. Nope. Nowhere close to it. Nowhere close to it. And that is strange because at every level, you have a Carlos Dunlap that you paid that's got experience. You got Bobby Wagner, the most expensive middle linebacker in the game. You got two safeties, you know, one of them the most expensive safety in the game, another one that's very good. So at every level, you do have experience and certainly guys that have done it to be rewarded for it. Offensive line, you got Dwayne Brown and Gabe Jackson, who you've paid. You got obviously Russell, Chris Carson, who you've paid, those two receivers. So, you know, it feels like it should be on paper so much more complete. And then the reality when you watch it is, sheesh, they aren't. They're not on the same page.
So you think it's scheme? I mean, listening to you, it sounds like you believe it's more scheme/coaching than it is talent? I'm just listening to what you just said. I mean, you're going through all the players that you think should be good. It sounds like you're saying it's more the position they're being put in as opposed to the players that are here.
I think so. Yeah, I think from a pure talent perspective, I don't think they're a 5-0 team. I don't even know if they're a 4-1 team, but they should absolutely be a 3-2 team from what I just said. And, you know, as you kind of make that clear and take my words and put them then on paper. Yeah, I think they should not be sitting here at 2-3.
I totally, totally disagree with you.
They absolutely kicked a game away that they should have had. They played horribly in Minnesota. We're never really even in that game. And the Rams are a more talented team than them.
Do they have an offensive position group, the Seahawks, that's worse than average in the league?
An offensive position group that is worse than average?
Nope.
Not one?
Nope.
At the very least average, and some of them top three in the league.
I don't know whether your offensive line is average or not. I honestly don't know.
It wasn't supposed to be based on everything that they put together.
But I just in
and
watching
last
them,
year's performance.
I don't know. I can't answer that one. Your tight
line
ends
or tight end. Yeah.
Yeah, tight end. I don't really know there either. There's a lot of good tight ends. They're certainly not elite there. Your wide receiver group, your top two are elite. Your quarterback should be elite.
Your running back is above average.
Yeah, but then I look at your defense and I don't see anything there.
Whew, do that same exercise on defense.
Is there a defensive player on your team right now that you think is above average? Quandre Diggs? I'll give you Quandre.
Maybe Quandre, yeah.
Do you see maybe above average for their position? You see one defensive player right now that's above average for their position?
Daryl Taylor is pretty close.
He's been good.
He's got some sacks and he doesn't play often.
He's been pretty good.
Right off the edge.
Puna and Woods do the dirty work inside.
Those guys are average.
But they're not. They're maybe average. I mean, there's no they're there.
The confidence of how those guys are average.
Right.
Like, hey, man, they got some average dudes out here.
They got four average guys on defense.
Great.
The squad is stacked.
I don't know. I'll just keep pointing at the fact that, you know, they haven't, in all of the years since the 2012 draft, they've essentially drafted three impact players since 2012. Three impact players.
Lockett, Clark, and DK?
Yep.
I mean, Chris Carson's got to be probably on that list.
There's good players. There's a bunch of other good players. That is not to say they have not drafted any other.
Damian Lewis, good player.
Good player. Maybe he could turn into something. It kind of remains to be seen there. He seems like a good player. They've drafted a bunch of other good players. That is not to say they've done nothing in the drafts in 10 years. But impact players.
They've hit singles and doubles, other than three home runs.
Early,
it was home run after home run after home run after home run.
Or at least triples and doubles thrown in there.
Singles and doubles. They've got significant number of strikeouts. Yeah, high leverage.
And I don't see any real. I mean, maybe I'll call Carson a double.
Carson's a walk.
Right.
Like, dude, you got the guy in the seventh round. You didn't. That's not
all right, but fine. But
you expect that.
But it's a walk when you end up taking second base and a steal. Like, he's been certainly better than you ever expected him to be. But you got to have something to balance out those strikeouts. I look at this and in free agency, Brock, it hasn't been much better. And now Jamal Adams, at least according to some of the metrics out there, is like the worst player in football. So Bobby Wagner, Pete, keeps pointing at the linebackers and saying they're the biggest problem in this one concept that is over and over again affecting them. How do I look at this defense and say that they have enough talent? I can't. Mm-hmm. How do I look at the offense? You're right. You got still three of those players in Russ and DK and Lockett. Okay. But your offensive line has not been a significant positive factor for you. The tight ends have not been a significant positive factor for you. The running backs, other than Carson, who's been in and out hurt and really hasn't been great, have not been a deciding factor for you.
You put 2 and 3 on the roster, or on the talent on the roster, not on the coaching.
I put 2 losses on the talent. I put 1 loss on Russell. That's where I'm at.
Okay.
Not on the coaching.
I don't think the coaching has necessarily been the problem, because I look at what Pete and Russ have done over the course of the last 5-6 years. I think they've been holding this thing together with coaching. They've been holding this thing together with baling wire and duct tape. And thankfully, Pete and Russ have done what they've done, or else we would have been how many times did we say this roster doesn't beat anyone else in the league? We said it a million times. Now, all that being said, we're going to find out a whole lot in the next 3 to 4 weeks.
Yes, we are.
We're going to find out, I think, a lot more about who's right and who's wrong, because I don't think either of us feel like we know for sure what the problem is, right?
No, and when you're 2 and 3, it's kind of squishy. And you can make an argument probably for either side of it. And yeah, now, okay, you go and win three or four here, and you know, you do get Saints and Jags at home, and yeah, you go to Pittsburgh, but this is not a monster Pittsburgh team. This is not this is not the Big Ben that you faced and people have faced a decade ago. This is a beat now. Oh, and they're really beat up. Lose a receiver, lose a linebacker. They've got injuries as well.
So let me give you some what ifs.
Let me just say this before we get into what ifs. Let me just say this. The coaching defensively this year, right? The number of times that Pete has had to, on multiple occasions, we got to fix this. Yep. We got to get this right. Yep. We got to fix this. And it's not getting fixed. And that's your job as a coach.
He says they're easy fixes.
That's your job as a coach. That's your job, Ken Norton.
Or maybe.
That's
or
your
maybe
job.
Or maybe the players aren't good enough to do it.
As you saw that tweet, after the game last Thursday, and I forget who it was on Twitter that showed you, they're running the same concept over and over and over and over.
And Pete said
you can't defend it and you can't cover
it. Maybe you don't have the right players for it.
You can't communicate it. Well, I don't see them just all of a sudden, oh man, I can't run with them. I'm 3 steps behind. Mike, they're in wide open spaces, Dixie Chick style. Like, there's no one even within earshot.
I don't get it.
Mike, that's right over my
head. I don't have any idea what you're talking about.
Kyle,
you're not into like 90s pop country?
No.
Come on, Mike.
Bonnie Raitt?
No, the Dixie Chicks had a song called Wide Open Spaces. And
is
that's
Winona Judd in the Dixie Chicks? Is Winona Judd in that band?
No,
she's in the Judds. Oh. Thus her last name.
What about Ashley Judd?
Remember the Dixie Chicks tried to rip George W. and it was bad. And
I remember that.
Yeah, they got in the big, of course, you remember the big feud with Toby Keith.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I remember you remembering about that.
Anywho, give me some what ifs.
Let's do some what ifs. What if the offense is good in the next few? Like, what if the offense functions better with Geno Smith? I am on record. I don't think that's going to happen. But what if it does? What will you learn if it does?
Then you will learn a quarterback playing within the rhythm and the confines of the play. I can't even say it because I don't think it's going
to
happen.
All right.
I think it's going
to
struggle.
There's a non-zero chance that what you're about to talk about is going to happen, Brock. So I would go for it.
Yeah, I think you've got to
see a quarterback stay in the pocket, step up in the pocket, trust his protection, and make throws.
When you throw to your first read on a consistent basis, Does the
I thought the problem
function?
Is Russell didn't wasn't able to go through his progressions. It's
or
that he doesn't
can't see.
Or that he locks into his third and fourth progression and says, that's the one I'm going to throw to down the field.
I never heard that interesting. One. Okay, he goes all the way.
I'm not even going to consider one and two because I think that three and four is a great option.
That's true? You think Russell won't consider his first option? Are you saying this for real or is this like you're
this
watching AHL hockey?
Why in the world do you watch a Seahawks offense that just has these wide open guys on the field that are not being thrown to, and then all of a sudden there's like contested passes 35 yards down the field? Like, why would you do that?
So you think it's just Russ won't throw to open receivers?
This is the question I think we'll see answered. If Geno's successful here, throwing 5 to 7 yards down the field.
And look, it's possible that Pittsburgh will choose to play prevent defense from the get-go, just exactly the way the Rams did when he came into the game on Thursday night. I suppose anything is a non-zero chance. But I don't know whether I'm
well. I think the biggest answer to that is actually going to be, and howdy, thank you. Call me to the carpet. Go ahead. Have an opinion. Appreciate that. You will see a quarterback and what will it look like on time? What will it look like on rhythm? What will it look like if he gets the ball out? What will it actually do for the offensive line? An offensive line that got hammered on the Dan Patrick show last January and February. What will it actually look like? Because that protection looked much, much better in the third and fourth quarter when Geno came in. Mm-hmm. That is a fact. The protection looked, in fact, Pete was asked about it after the game and said basically, yep, that's the best that they have looked this year. So is that an O-line that knows, okay, man, he's going to get the ball out. Okay, if I can protect for, 2.5 seconds, 3 seconds.
I mean, we say that, but Geno still had to scramble. He still had to run around. I mean,
he did at times. Yes, he did at times.
I think I got to say a little more than
but that will be, I think, one of the bigger what-ifs. Okay. What if this protection actually looks like NFL protection? Yeah, you still got to run around. You still got to do that. But it's not 4 sacks in the first half.
So go ahead.
No. Well, so I think that's one of the significant what-ifs there.
So if they function well, if they function cleanly here for the next few weeks, it is going to be, I mean, Howdy's ridiculous point or not, it will have some level of an indictment on Russell Wilson. It has to, that there is some sort of disconnect. It's mm-hmm. not that Russell's not elite. Russell's still a special player, but that there's some level of disconnect there between him and the coaching staff and the offense and what he wants to do versus what
vision
they
and timing.
Want him to do.
I think the disconnect would just be vision and timing.
Okay. If they just get blowed out, if it's bad, if their offense can't function, if Geno Smith is not up to it and it just is awful.
Like it did in Pittsburgh with T-Jack in one of the more defining moments of John and Pete's career.
So then what? What do you think then?
Then you're having some legitimate big picture. Hey, hold on a second. When this thing was built way back when, what was that, 2010? 2011, mm-hmm. that you went back there and you got physically assaulted and humiliated. And that was the game. I will never forget it, sitting after that game, right? And having this conversation the next training camp at that picnic table with you and me and John Schneider and him saying that will never happen again. We'll lose games. That's the NFL. But we will never be humiliated
and
the way
really
we were physically that
time.
Day.
It wasn't until they went to Jacksonville a few years ago that
they didn't
got
lose
physically
a
humiliated like
game
that
by
again.
Double digits for like 6 years.
Yeah.
Correct.
He was absolutely right. I mean, but that hasn't been true for 4 years now. They've been humiliated a few times. The Rams humiliated them. The Bills humiliated them last year.
Well, the Bills.
The Jags humiliated them physically. The Titans humiliated them a couple of years ago. Yeah, I mean, they've been humiliated since then, right?
Yes, but not quite like that.
No,
that was
the Bills was pretty bad.
The Bills.
But the Bills wasn't a physical. That was
you watched
a
the game. You were there. You
no,
were
I didn't just
the
watch
game.
The game. Like I worked.
You spoke
and I said
the game.
On the air, this looks like 7-on-7.
Well, it looked like the Minnesota game this year.
It
catches
exactly
the ball and there's no defender in the TV frame.
Right.
And it looked like the second half of the Rams game.
Yes.
So and those were just to me finesse.
But what if the offense does not? I mean, that's the defense. Fine.
Correct.
Like, that's not a Russ thing. What if the offense is unworkably bad? Then what?
Then it's an indictment on your roster. Then it's an indictment and it puts a big fat check mark in what you just said. That this isn't coaching. This is talent. This isn't Pete. This isn't Ken Norton. This isn't Shane Waldron. This isn't the coaching. This is the clay that they've been given to be molded. And it's obvious that clay for a number of years isn't good enough. That's what that is the indictment that will come.
Mm. If it takes an actual injury to Russell Wilson to realize that, then that is, I mean... That's a failure on the front office. But haven't Shame on them.
Isn't it what we've been saying for a few years? Take Russell Wilson off this roster, and what are the, what is their record? We were saying 2-14 last year.
Mm-hmm.
So now, if I mean, unless you think it's gotten significantly better since then, you'd say 2-15 or 3-14. I mean, like, what do you think this? What do you? They're it's interesting. They're going to play three of the best, like worst teams on their schedule during this first.
Not really. You say that Houston? Pittsburgh is still a brutal place to play. It's still a tough trip. It's still a physical team with a lot of pride.
What worst teams do they play other than Houston
this year?
Jacksonville.
Jacksonville.
Well, Jacksonville's in this group. Yeah.
Okay, Pittsburgh, but they play Pittsburgh and New Orleans. And New Orleans is a good roster. I know.
Tell me which teams other than Houston they play this year are worse than that. Maybe Washington? Okay. Tell me which other teams are worse than that that they're going to play this year.
Yeah.
They're not. They play good teams.
Yep.
The Green Bay's better than that.
Oh, correct. Absolutely.
Right? I mean, like, you start going to the list of teams are going to play. Your division's all better than that.
So they go Pittsburgh. They go at Pittsburgh, right? Then it's New Orleans at home, and it's Jacksonville. Yeah. Jacksonville's bad.
So of all the three games to get, other than getting Houston and maybe Washington.
Correct.
This is like a pretty good stretch. So if they fail in this stretch,
yeah,
that's a pretty significant indictment.
Yeah.
Yep. Tell you what I'd want if I were going at that three-game stretch and I wanted to make sure I won some games. I'd want me some Cam Newton. That's what I want.
Gosh.
Give it a rest, Mike. Had to listen to this all morning, all week.
People are furious at me over this take.
Oh, and you like it, don't you? It just girds your loins.
Well, I just don't understand why. Like, I kind of
neither
understand.
Do I, Mike. Neither do I.
Cam Newton was a 66% passer last year. Cam Newton ran for 600 yards last year. Geno Smith has never done anything like that.
And Bill Belichick went to the point of booting him off his roster.
No, Bill Belichick said nice things about him. And
he
honestly,
did, but he
did.
Still booted him off his roster.
Well,
he wanted
went to
with
go
Brian
with his
Hoyer
rookie, and sure. There was the COVID thing and all of that. But
right.
But if you need to, I'm not saying I want him to be my full-time starter. I want to build a team around him. I need to win a few games.
And sign Phillip Rivers.
I would do that, too.
Okay, well.
I would do either one of those things.
Well, how about what Geno did in the second half of that game and when he came in?
I'm not buying that Geno Smith completed a few passes against prevent defense, and now he's all of a sudden good.
He drove 98 yards.
Against a prevent defense.
It's like John Elway, Mike. That was the drive.
He wasn't like John Elway.
Oh.
Cam Newton was an MVP, for God's sakes.
When?
And people think he's arrogant, so they don't want him? Like, he's the only arrogant quarterback out there?
5 years ago.
He tweets in, like, Wingdings font.
Oh,
Mike.
Well, then
it's
forget
problematic.
It. Then he can't possibly win those three games. All right, fine. I guess, you know what, Kyle, you
it's the wing
me. Yeah, thank you. That was the final thing I needed to hear. Are you guys ready for Halloween? You guys know what, like, you want to do Halloween celebration?
Yeah, I'm going as a fireman.
Really?
Is that not what you asked?
No.
Oh,
I didn't mean
sorry.
That.
Oh,
I meant like,
well, you asked if we're ready for Halloween. Yeah, I got my costume.
I'm going as a candy corn.
To try to eat yourself and have bad dreams? Is that your goal?
Naughty dreams.
All right, what about right beforehand? How about October 30th? How about a little Dia de los Muertos? Do you know what you're doing for that, Kyle? No. Spanish
Day of
guy?
The Dead.
Yeah. Do you know what you're doing on Dia de los Muertos?
Harvesting.
Harvesting what? Souls?
Yes.
Well, why don't you go harvest over to Sen Prime Steak and Sushi? It's their third annual Dia de los Muertos lounge party. Saturday, October 30th from 8 to 11, you can unearth an affair full of light and color celebrating Dia de los Muertos on the 31st floor at a Sen Prime Steak and Sushi. Elevate your evening in the lounge and let the nighttime view take your breath away. See? That soul will be taken away.
Unearthed? I like a lot of that.
Yes, while specialty cocktails give you new life. You can indulge in an atmosphere unlike any other. You ready for what's there?
Hit me.
We got music from acclaimed local DJ Chris Charma. We got the all-night happy hour. You got costume contest, so
okay.
Maybe your fireman contest would be a big winner for you. Prizes awarded. Specialty beverages, 360-degree photo booth, the whole deal, much more. I don't want to ruin surprises.
I'm really proud of you for that, Mike. You have the language learning disability, pronouncing Dia de los Muertos.
Is that good?
An acento and everything.
Yeah, an acento.
Yeah,
well, it is Ascend Prime. I think you're saying that wrong. Ascend, not acento.
Acento Prime.
Ascend Prime. Let's make sure we get that right. I thought you were crediting me for not ruining a surprise, because generally I have a big mouth and I don't keep secrets very well.
Great point.
Yeah, there you go. You can learn more, purchase tickets. Thanks a lot, Howdy. Book your VIP table at ascendprime.com. So Titus is super into playoff baseball. Huh? That's his thing.
Yeah, he's
such
all
a baseball kid.
Yeah, and the problem is he's fairly tech savvy too. So he's looking stuff up, and he's you've heard of Perfect Game, the whole scouting service, kind of like AAU for baseball. He's like, Dad, there's a 12-year-old in the Dominican throwing 85. How do I throw 85? I'm like, bro, we
get
got a lot
Tommy
of work.
John now.
Yep, got a lot of work to do. Just keep working at it.
How hard is he throwing?
He's only throwing 82,
so he's really he's got to be up to
65, 68.
Yeah, he's like low 60s to mid 60s. He's getting there. He's working at it, but he loves it. And yeah, like just I was telling you on your morning show that I said I had to go down in the basement, like, bro, flip it over to the hockey, you know, because he is all into playoff baseball and will sit there and consume it for hour after hour after hour. He loves it.
Credit to him. It's been good. Honestly, I think the playoffs have been pretty fun to watch. I haven't watched every single game, and I know there have been some blowouts, and I've just sort of ignored those in terms of this take. But what I've watched has been, I think, really entertaining baseball. There's a lot of athletic, fun players to watch in the game.
Yep.
And even just, you know, I was going through this today, looking at the box scores from yesterday. It was like every win involved the best players in the league. It was like, okay, the Astros blow out Chicago. Okay, what happened? Well, Correa had two RBI, and Altuve drove in two, and Bregman drove in two, and Michael Brantley drove in two. Okay, well, how did Atlanta win? Well, Freddie Freeman hit a huge home run to win it in the eighth. All right, well, what about the Dodgers? Yeah, it was Corey Seager, and it was like Mookie Betts hit a home run. Like the best players in baseball,
cream rises, right?
Are absolutely rising to the top, and that makes it pretty fun to watch.
And as you watch it, and as I watch it and take it in, and with a Mariners team that played all the way to game 162, right, to put themselves at least in that position to be with those guys, as you watch it, do you see enough potential cream rising in
potential
the seasons
cream?
To come?
Yeah. Yeah, I see potential cream. I mean, the guys you have in Kelnick and Julio are absolutely capable of being in the caliber of the players I just mentioned.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't think that Jared Kelnick can be Alex Bregman? He can. He's not.
He's skim milk right now. He's not cream, but he could get there. He could thicken there.
He can absolutely be there. Don't you call
Kelnick skim milk?
Seriously, stop it. It's 2%.
I think Kelnick could end up being Alex Bregman. There's no reason he can't. He's got all the talent to do it. Can Julio Rodriguez be Mookie Betts? Sure. I mean, they're not built the same way, but like, could he be that kind of talent? Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Can you go sign in the offseason your Carlos Correa or Kyle Seager or Corey Seager, rather? You're not going to sign Kyle. Corey Seager? Sure. It won't be either of those two guys in all likelihood, but could you sign someone of that level? Yes. And if you had those three, would you be right there? Yes. Mm-hmm. If they all do what they're supposed to do and kind of grow into it. And then, you know,
because you actually have some of the other pieces, right?
Exactly.
So, yes,
right.
those teams are top heavy and star heavy, kind of back to our conversation last hour, looking at the Seahawks roster and everything else. So all those teams you mentioned all have the cream. They've all got star power. They've all got veteran difference makers, but they also got a bunch of role players.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a bunch of still very good, kind of to our elite, very good, still a bunch of very good players.
They have your Mitch Haniger and Ty France, but instead of hitting 2-3, they're hitting 6-7.
Yes.
Or 5-6.
Yep.
Right? I mean, like, that's the difference. And that's why I thought Jerry got it right in his press conference last week. He said, no, our role players are on this team. That's not what we're going out now looking for. We've got them. The problem is they were asked to carry the load this year. Ty France is a good player. I don't know whether Ty France is going to end up being, you know, the type of player we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean he doesn't play a huge role on a team that ends up being good.
So in the NBA, you need how many? How many, Howdy?
Three.
How many?
Well, it's now three, right?
Okay, so three. The NBA used to be two. Now you need the big three. You need three stars, right, as we're watching playoff baseball here. How many elite? How many just elite players do you need? Do you need three, four?
Well, you're including pitchers or just position players?
Just position players.
Oh, I don't think you need more than two elite players.
Okay.
But then you got to have a really solid rest of your team and the pitching
really
and everything
solid.
Else. But I think you can, you're talking elite, like the guys that we were just talking about, two. I think you can do it with two. It's hard because the Dodgers have 12. Like more than they can even fit
in
into their roster.
And Boston right now has Devers and
I think Boston
shortstop.
Has three.
Yeah.
They have three.
The Yankees have four.
But they have issues with their pitching. I mean, like, there's ways that balances out.
Blue Jays have four or five.
Yeah. I mean, so those things balance out. You don't have to, if you're going to pitch well, you don't, especially if your young pitching turns into what it's supposed to.
Yep.
You don't need more than two. Honestly, if Kelnick and Julio both hit and you go get a very good player in free agency or a trade this year, you probably are pretty close.
Along with JP and France and Haniger and keep those other pieces around.
Exactly. I mean, you're going to have to replace Kyle Seager, right? I mean, so that's what you've got to go out and get somewhere.
You're going to replace 100 RBIs next year.
Right, which I think you can do, but you've got to go out and actually do it. So I think you can get there with two elite players and then a lot of very good ones, but you're going to have the pitching. And your bullpen's still going to have to be really good. I mean, well,
what's a little scary about that then, you know, and why I didn't really like Passan's answer, you know, about, there's still 3 to 5 years. Because if it's Kelnick and Julio, when can they actually then be cream?
I think Kelnick will take a big step. I mean, look, are you expecting them to win the World Series next year or are you expecting them to make the playoffs?
I'm
expecting them to make the playoffs next year. That, to me, is the line they've now set. I am not expecting them to win the World Series next year, honestly. Okay. I think they're still a couple of years away from having enough talent fully developed in their organization to be top of the league World Series kind of contender.
To be one of the five teams that everyone thinks one of these five teams is probably
going
to win.
I don't think they're there yet. And Houston's not going away. And Tampa, Wander Franco's ridiculous.
Oh,
and like Chicago's not going away. Boston and New York are going to reload. And so like I'm not be World Series contenders, probably a couple more years. But to make the playoffs next year, I think it's pretty possible. Kelnick, the leap he should take in year two at age 22 next year, he should be a very good player. He's not what he's going to be by 25, but I think he should be a very good player next year.
Could he be 28 home runs hitting 250 next year?
Yeah, I think
totally
he could do that.
Possible. That's a very above average player.
Yeah, take some walks, work the on-base
percentage.
That's
kind of what he was in August, September, wasn't it?
A little worse than that, but yeah.
Yeah, it's not even what he was in September. That's a regression from September. Can Julio make your opening day roster and contribute next year? Yeah, he can. He might end up, you know, being Wander Franco this year, right? Shows up midway through the year. Franco was good. He wasn't incredible. He wasn't the best player in baseball. He's not those, you know, Bregman and Altuve and some of those players we were mentioning. So I think you do some of those things and you can be good next year, make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But you're right, Brock. For those guys to become who they ultimately could be, you're probably a few years away from that.
Yeah, man. And then you didn't even mention the pitching. I mean, you did briefly. If the pitching is what it's supposed to be, then that gives you a little bit of a buffer. That gives you a little bit more margin, right? Mm-hmm. That gives you hopefully an opportunity to spend even a little bit more cash, not just on an elite arm, but maybe on a couple difference-making
players.
And
I don't think Jerry wants to spend cash on arms. My belief in Jerry DePoto is that he just doesn't believe in big, huge contracts for veteran pitchers. Just doesn't want to do it. He just fundamentally believes that that's a problem. So if he's going to spend big money, he would rather do it on position players and develop his own pitching. It makes sense. He drafted a pitcher in the first round 3 straight years, right? I mean, like, that's been at the crux of Jerry's development plan here is develop the pitching and then go spend the money on the bats. And I think there's a lot of reality there. He's still going to have to spend some in pitching. You're still going to need some of that veteran presence around you. But I think it's a lot easier for these young pitchers to come up and succeed right away. And oh, by the way, can you end up moving Howdy's guy Justin Dunn to the bullpen and get a few miles an hour on his fastball? And can he turn into one of these dudes that's throwing in the sixth and seventh inning in addition to what you saw this year from Sadler and from Seawald and from some of those other guys? And oh, by the way, you add in Munoz next year who you acquired. You add in Giles next year who you have been waiting on in Tommy John surgery. So yeah, I can see how the plan takes shape pretty quickly, can't you?
And I just want you to know that I think every time Titus watches Houston, he's still furious.
Really?
These guys are cheaters. I just don't get it.
Cheaters.
Well, who's he going to root for in this series? Because Cora got suspended, too.
Yeah, I don't know. But he doesn't understand it. I mean, at least Cora paid a little bit of his penance. Like, these guys, Altuve, did these guys even miss a game? Did they even miss a season? Like, this is stained. They're tainted. They're cheaters. Like, I should probably quietly record him one time.
You would get stained.
Yes.
It's a blemish on your name.
I don't. Titus is black and white,
Bregman,
man.
Bregman was never caught up in that, right? Wasn't it? It was really Altuve and who else? Was Bregman caught up
in that?
Maybe
don't rip my jersey. Don't tear off my jersey.
Yeah, Altuve.
Out of nowhere, driving home.
They don't
from
seem
school
to be having any problem hitting the ball this year.
Yeah, that's
doing it home.
Yeah, but instead the White Sox were saying they were stealing signs.
Well,
game four.
Hey, don't leave your signs so open to be
and
stolen.
And Dusty Baker didn't really deny it. He just said, well, I think about that song that says, don't cast stones.
But you can absolutely steal signs as long as you're not recording it and using some of the... I mean, you can steal signs.
The indication was, this is very different in their ballpark than ours. That was what the pitcher came out and said. And the defense was, meh. Whatever.
Didn't they just score 12 runs in their ballpark to win the game? Get out of here. I'm sorry. I don't mean to sit here and defend the Astros, but
you
do. Does Dusty Baker wear wristbands?
I kind of stand for the Astros.
Kyle, you would know the answer to this.
Cam Newton and the Astros.
The wristbands that Dusty Baker wears. Is it a picture of himself on his own wristbands?
What?
If you noticed his wristbands.
It's Dusty Baker's signature coaching wristband. Oh. It's like the Gordon Bombay coaching shoe. No, well, and Dusty Baker intermittently coaches in either batting gloves like he's Ichiro or surgical gloves like he's Dr. Neil Ellitrash or something. Like, what are we doing here? Why are you in surgical gloves?
I assume he's got a picture of Mark Pryor on one hand and a picture of Kerry Wood on the other as reminders of what he did to two of the best young pitchers of their generation.
Watch me blow out these arms.
That's like his penance. He's got to wear them to remind himself.
Yes, he wears them in advance of the pending Tommy John surgery.
Here's what's going to be happening to Lance McCullers sometime down the road here. All right. The other big news, of course, this week, Brock, is not nearly as fun, is the Washington football team and John Gruden. First of all, complete mess. You and I talked about it both on and off the air. John Gruden's never going to work again in the NFL. His name is tarnished forever. He hit the trifecta of racism, sexism, and homophobia, and oh, by the way, insulted his boss. And despite all of that, I can't believe Bruce Allen has not been further taken down by what's happened. Bruce Allen was the president of the Washington football team at the time. That's why this investigation was occurring, right? Because of that team. As the president of the organization, so everybody reports up to him, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's sending pictures, topless pictures of team employees, possibly taken without their knowledge, to John Gruden. That seems not
and he's
just
receiving all and he's and he's receiving all of these emails from Gruden, right? So
that's insane.
Are you going to tell me that every time he received one of these emails from Gruden and all over all of these years, he was just like, oh, that's inappropriate, delete?
No, because it says they exchanged photos of topless dancers. How would John Gruden have the topless dancers? I mean, I'm just using logic here, but don't those have to have been sent from Bruce Allen to John Gruden? It's not like Gruden has naked pictures of his cheerleaders.
So. I hope not from the other people on this thread, which was like the CEO of Hooters and one other guy, a Tampa businessman.
Bruce Allen's the one who has the access to
The podcasts to follow in the weeks and months ahead.
Ugh.
Do we think that John Gruden is going to be the only one in these 650,000 emails?
Well, I don't know.
Maybe.
It depends. The NFL is not exactly being transparent with this, right? I'm sure they can't be because of the legal ramifications. This was leaked. Well, it's not like the NFL.
But it was leaked by who?
But somebody at the NFL, not like it wasn't necessarily Roger Goodell coming out with a press conference and saying, we have unearthed these emails and we now need to tell you about them. They're not there yet.
It was just, we had these emails. We were planning to sit on them until John Gruden offended me. And now I will leak them to burn him personally.
Doesn't it seem that way?
Yes.
It feels that way.
And they did the whole investigation into Washington, and the only person to lose their job is someone with the Raiders.
John Gruden?
And I know you can't make Bruce Allen lose his job because he doesn't have a job right now.
He already lost his job.
I don't understand how they've had the emails of Bruce Allen, president of the team, exchanging topless pictures of his employees potentially taken without their knowledge. And that was sat on for like a minute.
Yeah,
because they're protecting Daniel Snyder.
Well,
as Andrew Brandt said, here exemplifies the difference between those who write the checks and those who cash.
But hold on, we've seen owners go down before, right? I mean,
saw the Richardson with the Panthers.
Yes, Jerry Richardson. We saw Donald Sterling. So it's not like impossible to take down an owner.
How did those situations start?
It got leaked first,
and then some outside source went out and found information that the leagues had to deal with.
But wasn't that what had already happened with Dan Snyder? There was enough outside stuff. Women were coming forward and saying that they had their passports taken away, that they were asked to be used as escorts, that they were topless pictures without their will. Like that's already enough. So it's surprising to me that it's not because it's Roger Goodell and it's the NFL, but. Yeah, I don't know whether that argument of owners get protected and everybody else gets burned works here, because they'd already started down the path of burning Daniel Snyder, who's a terrible owner and bad for
But it's still an owner.
And they just said, your wife's going to run this now. Why don't you step aside?
They gave him his punishment. That's done in their minds. They did their thing. That's it.
Well, I don't know the answer to your question, Brock. I don't know whether or not there will be more people.
I don't think this will.
It's not going to just go away. Yeah,
it is not going to just go away. And other people are going to be involved. And as we're taping this today, there's, you know, Adam Schefter now gets thrown into it, not in any of this, you know, criminal fashion or disgusting fashion, but just from a work ethics standpoint of sending Bruce Allen an article and saying, hey, what do you think?
What was the point of that? Just to make Schefter look bad?
Probably.
I mean, I'm not sure I fully understand that. These things get real sketchy. I'm glad that these emails were unearthed. I'm glad John Gruden was exposed. I'm glad that we now have that knowledge, and he deserves what happened to him. There is an element of privacy concerns, obviously, that comes up here. These were private emails that were sent, and who knows, who gets to decide where to draw that line?
Who gets to decide where we want transparency where we don't? Who gets to decide out of all of these owners, and many of them have been from the good old boys club for a long, long time, when do we shine the light on their past?
Right.
When do we shine the light on their emails? When do we shine the light on the people that they have hurt?
Well, never, because they're smart enough not to allow any of that stuff to be out there, and they've got fixers because they've got enough money to make sure that doesn't happen, right?
Yes.
John Gruden doesn't know enough to have a fixer.
And the plausible deniability that they could have. But when do they want to shine that level of focus and that level of transparency? When?
Well, they don't, obviously. But I think the whole idea of what gets leaked and who makes the decision on that, like, again, I think something good came out of this. I'm still a little uncomfortable with how it happened, because you have a leaked email that isn't supposed to get out there. And it's one thing when it's John Gruden, we all kind of nod our head and go, well, all right, I guess it was worth it in this situation because they exposed a racist and a homophobe and a sexist and all of the above. And he loses his job. And we kind of go, well, had that coming. But Adam Schefter, and I'm not like I defend Adam Schefter. I don't really care about him one way or another, but he's just being embarrassed. Right, he's just getting dragged for no good reason. He didn't do anything illegal.
Nope.
He didn't do anything that we all agree is maybe you'd say it's immoral, but it's not like it differs.
Well, it's just the ethics of journalism, right? It's just you're letting him write
the
story.
Specific thing that he's getting dragged for?
He was sending stories
during
to
the
Bruce
lockout,
Allen, saying, "Hey, are you okay with me printing this?" Essentially,
before they got out,
calling him Mr. Editor, wanted you to look at these. Were you fact checker? Let me know if you need any change.
I mean, Adam Schefter is an information broker,
but
what
it's weird. It's hard to connect the dots to why Adam Schefter got thrown into this by the L.A. Times, and
the connect the dots is taking one to the other and saying, this is Schefter and more of the media covering for the NFL and making sure that they don't say something that might upset them or let information out that they don't want. Not journalistically saying,
and
I know
understand that that is a story that needs to be told. Does Adam Schefter need to be made to look ridiculous here? I don't know. Maybe he does. But I think that that's a slip. I don't need to be like Brock here, but that does present a slippery slope. Are you unearthing emails to get rid of people that are in power, entitled, and not being held accountable for real grievous sins? Or are you doing it to embarrass people you don't like?
And remember what this story brings me back to a little bit. A couple years ago, Houston Nutt, down at Ole Miss, suing Ole Miss for defamation and tearing his good name apart. And it wasn't until they went through phone records that what happened. Why is Hugh Freeze calling these numbers? It wasn't until they looked at all of those numbers and all those emails and what is this? Right. So you dig into the Washington football team and you've got now 650,000 emails. And are you telling me that John Gruden is the only one? He is the only coach.
He is
the only owner. He is the only GM.
I hope he's the only one throwing that kind of language around on email. I sure do. I hope he's the only one throwing it around at all. I would be surprised if he is. I wouldn't be surprised if he's the only one emailing it. That wouldn't shock me.
Correct.
I mean, do you think, I don't know, maybe, gosh, I don't, I guess I don't know.
Over a 10-year period, and what was acceptable 10 years ago or was laughed at?
I don't think any of that was acceptable 10
years ago. It wasn't acceptable. What was like, oh, okay, he's just being a doofus.
I'm not buying that argument. That was not acceptable 10 years ago. No, and some of those emails were like 3 years ago. Yeah, I don't think that that's the case. I don't think so. I don't think that the stuff about Jeff Fisher and Michael Sam was acceptable when it happened. I don't think it was acceptable to use racist language at any point. Nope. I don't think that it was acceptable to start throwing around the F word like he did.
Yep.
That was not acceptable at that time.
Yeah.
There's no doubt that that cultural standards have changed over the course of the last decade and the last 20 years, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
We're not sitting here calling out every 90s rapper for the things they said. Things have changed since then. Were they right? Were they wrong? There's a good argument there. But that's not this.
Yeah.
Those things were not acceptable when they were said.
Yeah.
They were not the norm. Were they? No.
No.
They were.
No. They were not the norm. Were in some of that world, some of that old school world, some of, unfortunately, the power and the control that some of those people wield to, as you said, cover themselves or have fixers. I just find them hard to believe that John would be the only one, the only NFL employee, the only prominent figure out of all of those emails using that horrific language.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
All right, Brock, a little Blue 88 to finish strong here. Talk a little more football. Dan Quinn, former D coordinator here, having all kinds of success back as a defensive coordinator now in Dallas. What is he doing that they're not doing here?
He is getting their best players to be the biggest difference makers on the team. And a little tip of the cap to our old buddy Bo, one of our great listeners back in the heyday. It just texted me, and still a diehard Seahawk fan, even though he's living, I think, down in
Louisiana. He's Bo in the Bayou now.
Yeah, Bo in the Bayou now.
Bo in L.A.
That's right. No longer Bo in L.A. Now he's Bo in Baton Rouge. And he's like, dude, look at what Dan Quinn's doing. He's getting his two best players, right? The young rookie to play off the charts, Micah Parsons, be a difference maker, a tackler, a front seven influencer. And then on the back end, Diggs, the corner's got like eight picks. Like, what if Bobby Wagner and Jamal Adams were difference makers? What if in the middle of your defense, Bobby Wagner was what he's supposed to be, and more importantly, Jamal Adams, who's younger than Bobby, is a difference maker, either through sacks or takeaways or negative plays or just an influencer, and he's not. And Dan Quinn's getting it there to the point that they cut an expensive veteran and are getting it out of their young studs, and that's just unfortunately not happening in Seattle.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with all of that. I mean, you know, Jamal Adams is in his prime.
You know what's most disappointing?
That's more like expected, I would say.
I will tell you what is very disappointing, and I'm surprised that frankly, Pete and the folks there are enabling it, that Jamal Adams isn't speaking on the record. The fact that Thursday night he can duck out of that place without having to just own it, like, hey, man, you're getting paid $17 million a year. Like, we made the move for you. You came here because of your voice, because of your edge. We need you.
He spoke on the record 2 weeks ago.
Well, he didn't speak Thursday night, and I confirmed that and reached out to some media members, said I want to hear him speak.
I don't think he spoke. I don't know if he spoke after Minnesota. He definitely ducked out after the Tennessee loss. He ducked out after the Rams.
He has spoken midweek. It's not like he's been silent. He has spoken midweek.
That's fine midweek. Okay, you need to speak. You need to be the voice. You need to be, hey, you know, when it's not going well, it's easy when you're on top of the mountain. When the mountain's right in front of you, what are you doing? What are you taking responsibility? I tweeted that during the game. I was like, I'm very curious here. You know, is there going to be accountability for, you know, busting and losing and cover two coverage? Is there going to be responsibility for giving up a touchdown and man-to-man coverage? Is there going to be responsibility, man, when you are the voice of that defense? And to duck out of there on multiple occasions, you know, been hard to see.
I'm really glad you said this. I had not thought about that at all. But, you know, remember earlier this year, Joe Smith, who the Mariners had traded for, got their team into trouble, and he left Steckenrider, I think it was, in a completely impossible position that he valiantly tried to get out of, and he couldn't. They lost the game.
He gave it up big. Yeah. Steckenrider did.
But there was nothing. I mean, like, there wasn't much he could do. He was like, came into a bases.
He gave up a couple walks. He had runners on first and second.
Totally gave it up.
He was in a bad spot, and it was because of Joe Smith putting him in that spot. And after the game, Joe Smith wouldn't let Steckenrider answer questions.
Yep.
He said, I'm going to do it. I'm the veteran. I'm the one who put you in that spot. You go sit over there and be better next time, please. But I'm the one responsible for this mess. I'm the veteran.
Yes.
Have we seen that from, I mean, if we keep hearing from Pete, it's kind of the linebackers. It's not really the corners.
Don't hear it from Bobby, and you don't hear it from Jamal.
Where is that?
You heard it from Quandre saying, hey, we know what's wrong. Dick said it after the game, right? He spoke, hey, we know what's wrong. We got to fix it. We heard the corners kind of make excuses, and one of the corners who did so is no longer a Seahawk.
Bye-bye.
Yep, we heard that. But we've not heard from Jamal and Bobby in that regard. Right, I've not heard them, especially owning it after a game like that. Right. That is on you to
That's
own
on
it.
Me. I got to be.
This is football, man. This is competition. This is what it is. And by the way, you weren't Richard Sherman winning the Super Bowl and doing all of that when Richard, you know, kind of pulled those antics and blamed others and pointed fingers. At least Richard had pelts on the wall. It had been an All-Pro. It had been a dominant player.
I mean, Bobby's got those things.
He does.
So do you think I was going to bring up Sherman too? Do you think Bobby just never had to develop that because he was on a defense with Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill?
Maybe. It's a good question. Question number two. In the early years of the Pete and John era, they were famous for what they did with cornerbacks, right? Yeah. Every cornerback got developed, and they had, I mean, the rest of the league was living off Seattle cornerbacks. They had such a surplus of them.
Yes.
What has happened?
It's gone.
Because they have not developed a cornerback since who?
Yeah, we were talking about this in the opening segment, right? About the difference makers and who they drafted and where did they hit on. And, you know, you could maybe say, hey, hold on a second. Shaq Griffin's got to be on that in that conversation, does he not?
Good player.
Yep, I bet, you know, the Jaguars signed him to $60 million and gets a pretty significant deal there. And I always thought he was good, but he was never great, never elite, because he had no ball skills and couldn't take the ball away from you. I was looking at, I think Bob Condotta tweeted this out yesterday or earlier in the week, with the impending release of Trey Flowers. The impending release, Trey Flowers, and is, you know, this goes live, he's not going to be a Seahawk. Do you realize for the preseason opener this year, there were 10 corners on the roster? They're now, with Trey's release, only three. So those are the guys that you spent this offseason.
Three off of that 10. Yeah.
Three of those 10. That's it. So you spent
an offseason. One of them is your third-round pick, or fourth-round pick.
Correct, Trey Brown. Yep, who's not playing right now. But those are the guys that you spent the offseason. Or those are the guys, hey, man, it is so important. Language matters. Skill matters. Practice matters to Pete Carroll, right? You get on that field, and you spend all this time working them, and all of the excuses they made for Trey Flowers for all of these years when you just watched them and went, man, he's just not a corner. Like, he didn't take the ball away. He was a safety in college for a reason. You know, he just didn't have it. And now they finally ultimately admit, and they're going to release him in season. And that was a guy that was your week one starter. So time and again, man, that has just been a terrible miss of both, I think, evaluation. Trey Brown, I saw him at Oklahoma. You know what I thought of Trey Brown at Oklahoma? Okay, he's all right. But he gets picked on, and he's vulnerable, and, you know, and now that guy's going to be an elite corner in the NFL?
Well, I mean, to be fair, that was the knock on Richard Sherman. I mean, nobody thought he was going to be. They're looking for some specific things, but I think the point is still well taken that for however many years now, they've yet to develop a cornerback, and that used to be the thing that they could hang their hat on. Question number three. College ranks, Brock. I know you're excited to talk about college football. Do you still work in college football? Is that still happening? That's still part of the
thing. Hey, Kyle, was Saturday not the greatest Saturday for college football in your lifetime?
Giga Maggie's, baby.
I mean,
Coach Luke.
The Red River rivalry shootout going down to the final seconds. A&M beating Alabama. An Iowa, Penn State, two teams in the top four in the Big Ten. Rushing the fields all over the place. Total pandemonium. Yeah.
Sorry, I was busy playing up to over 100 shots at Chillin Muni on Saturday. So I was busy trying to hit little teeny tabletop greens and failing spectacularly.
Well, you missed one of the greatest days in college football history, but go on.
Well, was UW part of it?
UW beat the heck out of BYE. Oh. I mean, they got...
Good game for them.
They got after those guys as well as they ever did.
They're going to beat BYE. How are they going to do against UCLA?
Yeah, well, I'm going to be very, very curious this podcast next week and in the weeks ahead, because I think both in-state programs are a little bit of a crossroads. We'll talk next week because obviously, October 18th will have passed by then, and we'll see whether Nick Rolovich is going to be the coach and whether it's going to be a first-place Cougars team if they win this week.
Gut feeling, will Rolovich be the coach?
Gut feeling, I don't think he's fired. I bet he's put on administrative leave. That would be my gut.
My gut feeling is that he is the coach.
Your gut feeling is he is?
Yep. My gut feeling is he took the shot and he's the coach. He's not going to talk about it. He's not going to tell anybody. He won't say a word. My gut feeling is that he is the coach. Just a gut. I have no information. Just completely a guess.
Total
gut. That's just my gut feeling.
Gotcha.
So what about you? What about UW?
And they're at a bit of a crossroads, too, because they had a bye week to look at everything they did and, more importantly, everything they did not do offensively. I was looking at some numbers as I'm getting ready for Michigan State, Indiana. You can watch that this weekend, Salk. Top 10 Michigan State team. Washington has zero plays of 50 plus yards this year. Not one explosive play over 50 yards. They have one run for over 20 yards. Both of those are near the very bottom of all of college football with the worst of the worst teams. If they do not come out of this bye week and push the ball down the field and attack and be aggressive, and a UCLA defense in particular that gives up massive, massive passing yards because they do everything to stop the run. And they throw more than an extra hat at stopping the run and hitting the quarterback. But it gives you massive, massive voids to take advantage of, as Fresno State did and as Arizona State did against them. If they do not make some changes and wholesale changes in aggressiveness offensively, I don't know how they go to a bowl game. And if they don't go to a bowl game, that's going to lead to, I think a lot of tough conversation.
Good stuff. All right, that's Blue 88, and that'll do it for us. We're going to learn a lot over the next 7 days, I would say. When we get back here together next week, we're going to know a little bit more about the Seahawks. We'll know a little bit more about the Huskies, as you just said. Nick Rolovich.
The Cougs. The Kraken. Whew, so much going on.
Yeah, I'm excited to see a few more Kraken games and get a sense as to kind of where they're at. So, good stuff, man. This is a lot of fun today. I enjoyed this. We will be back to do it again a week from now. Until then, hey.
Here's in the barn.
See you, everybody.
Get to the chopper!